Vicious Marina, Rapshlita. Well, you might wonder, why am I talking about Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach to a Jewish audience? But they're not only duties for the Gentiles, they are duties for us as well. It's always interesting how the English language has a word for somebody who is a non-Jew, but it hasn't got a word for somebody who's a non-Christian, even though we're less than 0.5% of the population. So the word Goy is not really an accurate word, because the Jewish people are called Goy 60 times in Tanakh. So we'll refer to Gentiles. And the commonly held view amongst our Gentile friends is that they are obliged to keep the Ten Commandments. And that's not really the case. It's really seven commandments, but we will see whether it's really seven or a different number. That's what we're going to ask. We're also going to look at the aspects relating to Olam Haba for our Gentile friends who keep to the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. I'm glad to say that I've always found my Gentile friends who I've worked with extremely pleasant and who went out of their way to help me, which isn't always the experience that some people have. And for me it was a personal pleasant experience on a Friday to be told, well, you better hurry up and go home, you know, the sun is going down. But it can get a bit embarrassing sometimes when they go out and specially buy you things for their birthday parties, which they think you can eat but you can't. I even had one fellow once coming up to me and he said to me, you remember you once told me that a reindeer is a kosher animal? Well, I came back from Sweden and I brought back some meat for you. Anyway, the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach are listed by the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, Perek Ches, Perek Tes. Anyway, he quotes from the Tosefta of Avodah Zarah, Tes Dalud, and Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Nun Vav, that there are seven mitzvahs for which B'nai Noach have to keep. Three of them are what we call the cardinal sins, namely to refrain from Avodah Zarah, from idolatry, from Gilui Aroyos, immorality, and Shfichas Domim, murder, bloodshed. And then in addition to those three, there are, and we can remember them with Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalud, Aleph standing for Eve Min Hachai, to eat from the limb of a living animal, Beis, Birkas Hashem, which is blasphemy, to bless God in the euphemistic sense. Gimel stands for Gezel, stealing, theft, and Dalud stands for Dinim. Dinim meaning laws generally, which it means effectively that the Gentile has a duty to set up courts of law for enforcement purposes of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, in addition maybe to any other social laws which may be introduced. And says the Rambam, Kol hamakadol sheva mitzvahs, the nizhar lasosam, and one is careful to keep to them, harizeh mechasidei umos ha'olam. Such a person is called the righteous of the righteous Gentiles, chasidei umos ha'olam, the yesh lo chelek l'olam haba, and such a person has a portion in the world to come. The Rambam says that in order to keep these seven mitzvahs b'nei noach properly, a person should actually declare that he or she accepts them in front of a Beis Din of three, and declare that they're keeping them not simply because they make sense, but because God commanded them through Moshe Rabbeinu at Mount Sinai. And according to the Rambam, if it's only done out of pure common sense, that's not really good enough. Such a person is called civilized, but is not necessarily a Ben Olam Haba. But the Kesef Mishnah writes that this is Svarad Nafshe, that's the Rambam's own view, and we do find other views who hold differently. Shmashma from the Sefer Yireim says that even if a Gentile simply keeps the seven mitzvahs out of pure intellect, without them having been handed down by Moses at Sinai, that's also good enough. And the Meiri and Sanhedrin indicates that it has not got to be declared in front of three people that one is keeping these seven mitzvahs. But the question we're going to ask today is, are there really seven, or are there more than that? For example, does a Gentile have a mitzvah to keep to give charity, or to honor parents? And we're going to have a look at those. And then there's another question, what if a Gentile keeps some of these, but not others? Namely, not the whole seven. The Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tzadi Beis Omad Aleph, actually refers to 30 mitzvahs which B'nai Noach have to keep. But it does not list them. And Rashi actually says there, Lo nisparshu, they are not given to us as a list. The Gemara Yerushalmi in Avodah Zarah Perek Beis Halacha Aleph doesn't say that they are current mitzvahs, but they are osid in B'nai Noach l'kabel aleihem, they are duties which B'nai Noach will accept upon themselves in the future. But the Forshim from the time of the Gaonim, who actually list what these 30 are. Rav Shmuel ben Chofni Gaon, who was the father-in-law of Rav Achai Gaon, he 1,000 years ago listed these, and it wasn't found till relatively recently in the Cairo Geniza. And he lists from the Gemara in Sanhedrin Nun Vav 30 different mitzvahs, including those 7, but adding certain other ones like Sirus, it's forbidden to castrate an animal or a human, Kilaim, not to interbreed species, and he lists Kibbud Av Aim, he lists sorcery, black magic, which is forbidden. And there is another Gaon called Rav Menachem Azari Mipano, who also lists 30 in his Sefer Asorah Maimrius. But the general attitude of the Mephoshim is they all emanate from the 7. So the 7 are like core values and not just mitzvahs. And the why, therefore, are there particularly 7? We will find as we look at the Torah and Sefer Bereishis that people were punished for not keeping to those 7. For example, Cain was punished for murder, Abimelech was punished for Gilui Royos, the Mabul, the flood of Noah, came about because of Chomos, it came out idolatry, Rashi says it came out because of theft, and the Dor HaFlogo committed Birkas Hashem. So there are these various examples given, or they are specifically mentioned. Edom and Achai is actually mentioned in Bereishis Perek Tes Pasuk Daled as an Issa for the Bnei Noach. According to the Rambam, only 6 mitzvahs were given to Adam HaRishon, and the 7th one was given to Noach. And that one is Eva Min Achai. Some say that Adam HaRishon was not told about the issur of eating from a limb of a living animal, because he wasn't allowed to kill for food in any case. He was forbidden to kill for food. That's not to suggest that he was a 100% vegetarian, because according to Tosfos in Sanhedrin Daf Nun Rav Amud Beis, if Adam HaRishon would have found a nevela, a dead animal, he would have been allowed to eat it, because he was simply forbidden to kill for food. And it was only at the time of Noah who was allowed to kill for food. But others disagree with the Rambam, and they say Eva Min Achai was given to Adam HaRishon as well. So as we're going to discuss the various Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, we will find that they are very... there are a significant number of derivatives which come out from those 7, or different classifications. For example, when we talk about Gilui Royos, immorality, there are different Isurim relating to particular relationships. For example, a married woman, or an incestuous relationship like a sister, and that kind of thing. And those are really separate commandments. So that's the Chinuch rites in the Lo Sa'aseh Tov Kaf Dalet, under the mitzvah of not being allowed to steal. He says the 7 mitzvahs Bnei Noach are really categories. They're not mitzvahs, because there are various particulars which come out from the categories. Hence, for example, as I just said with Gilui Royos. The Rambam says that we have a duty to persuade our Gentile friends to keep to the 7 mitzvahs Bnei Noach. And the question is, do we therefore have to set up missionary activities for all the non-Jewish peoples in the world to try and bring them in to the fold, not to be idolatrous and to keep to all these other mitzvahs? According to the Ravad, he says this only relates to Eretz Yisrael. The Ger Toshav is the one who keeps to these mitzvahs, Bnei Noach. He is entitled to citizenship in the land of Israel, and we have a duty to support such a person. And so we have a duty to lachuf, to persuade such people to keep to the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. And according to the Sifri, not only Eretz Yisrael, but the cities nearby surrounding Eretz Yisrael. But no one I've come across suggests that we should be persuading all non-Jewish people to keep to these, although there is one source I found, and that was the Lubavitcher Rebbe did come out with such an edict, that we should be mindful of the fact that we should be persuading Gentile friends to keep to these 7 mitzvahs. So if we go through the various mitzvahs one by one, Avodah Zarah, Hashem is one, and even if a person knows that God is supreme but also worships other things like planets or rain and so on, then that is idolatrous. I once worked with somebody who said to me, quite openly and honestly, that he prays to the sun and he prays to the rain because he says those are the things which give him sustenance, without realizing that there is a supreme being who has made these things. That is pure idolatry, and so we do see Avodah Zarah happening nowadays b'zman hazeh. Buddhism, Hinduism are definitely Avodah Zarah. The question that arises always about Christianity, whether it's called idolatry. My Rosh Yeshiva was Rav Meir Schlesinger. He was of the view that Protestantism for them is not idolatry. For us it is, but the problem with it is it's called shittuf, partnership, where the Christians accept that there is one God, but that one God is manifested in certain partners. The Noda Behuda in Chelek Beis Kuf Mem Ches, he holds that most opinions are saying that partnership is osur and comes under Avodah Zorah, but my Rosh Yeshiva holds that Catholicism is Avodah Zorah because of the certain rituals that they go through with the bread and the wine and so on. I'm not even quite sure what they are, but certainly none of this is for us. The Ramot, interestingly, in Aruch Chaim talks about Shittuf in Siman Kuf Nun Vov, that people who are nowadays engaged in this kind of religious outlook are not really idolatrous. That's the way the Ramah writes. The Rambam talks about different Isurim under Avodah Zorah, like erecting a monument which people bow down to, Asherah, a group of trees which are used by idolaters, a graven image. The Gemara itself talks about witchcraft. So you get, therefore, the various derivatives coming out of one concept, so it's not just one mitzvah. If we then move forward into the subject of murder, that's probably the most explicit one of all of them. Bereishis, in chapter 9, verses 5 and 6, it's very clear, and Cain, as we know, is punished, and people would not have been punished for sins had they not been told beforehand that you're not allowed to do them. So under murder come various other things like what people call mercy killings, euthanasia, abortions. These are all called murder. Rashi in Bereishis, Perektes Posatei, talks about suicide. And serous castration is really a derivative of that. Yes.
You say abortion is considered as murder. Is it? I mean, I'm such a 40 days doing...
Right, there are various halakhic considerations as to from when we call it murder, when the fetus has formed. And 40 days is in halakha the norm, but and certainly if the health of the mother is seriously at risk, then an abortion is allowed, and we could spend the whole shiur just talking about abortion. But the general principle of it is that it is regarded as murder.
I have heard that it's more serious for them than for us, is that right? Abortion.
There are certain different parameters which we're not going to have time to go into. For example, we have from Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai certain parameters, for example, that if you steal less than a Shavat Prutah, you're not liable. But because the Gentiles don't have the standard from Sinai about the measurements, then if a Gentile steals less than a Prutah, then he is liable. So paper clips from the office can't be taken. If we move to the subject of arayos, immorality, the Gemara learns it out mainly from the Pasuk in Bereishis, Perek Beis, verse 24. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cling to his wife and they shall be as one flesh. And from the different phrases, the Gemara finds that incest is forbidden. That's basically close relations. Adultery meaning an eshes ish, a married woman, mishkav zochor, homosexuality, and mishkav behema, which is bestiality. Interestingly, the one in the list in Acharimos, which is called a toeva, an abomination, is homosexuality. And nowadays, you see how it's glorified in the press and how it's legalized. There is just no justification in Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach as well as the Torah for someone to be practicing homosexuality. If one has a destructive tendency, one should seek correction. And we find in history that those countries which glorified it and legalized it ended up as very weak empires after their glory. Sodom, of course, was well known for this. Ancient Greece was well known for it. And look where Greece is now, a bankrupt country in the EU.
Is it so bankrupt?
So, the UK is on its way out, I think. Coming out from this is the opposite, and that is there is a mitzvah to procreate. But the mitzvah of Peru or Avu, or there's another verse, Lo Sovar Ola Shemes Yitzorah, applies, according to Tana Devei Menashe, to Gentiles as well. And that therefore adds to the seven in addition. On the subject of castration, the Ritvaz is quite amazed at the Rambam, that he doesn't actually list it as one of the seven, as well as sorcery. He thinks that they should be shown as one of the core values. As far as Eishes Ish is concerned, a married woman, in the terms of Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, no get is required for a woman to become unmarried. All it needs is for the couple to separate from each other. Either he drives her out or she leaves him, and that is enough to give her the status of not being called a married woman anymore.
I mean, what is marriage?
The fact that if a man brings a woman into his house, the Shein Ishus, then that is called marriage. The Shein Ishus as opposed to the Shein Zanus. The Minchas Chinuch in Lamed Gimel interestingly says that rape doesn't come under Gilo Arayos, but it comes under theft, for which a guy is Chayav Misa, because the concept of rape, which might happen to women who are not from incestuous relationships, who may be unrelated, where it is permitted for a relationship to take place, if rape nevertheless happens, then that person is like stealing the woman's body, and a person who commits rape is called a thief and is punishable by death. Coming then on to theft, we know the story from the Torah that Dina was kidnapped by Shechem, so that was theft. So that justified the brothers of Dina to go in and do the massacre that they did. So you might say, well, why did they kill out the whole of Shechem? And the answer to that is because everybody knew what was happening, and they all stood aside and said nothing, and did not perform the other mitzvah of B'nai Noach of dinim, of appointing law courts to enforce. And for that reason, they were all liable. In that case, you can ask, why was Yaakov Avinu so angry with Shimon and Levi? The way he describes them in Parshas Vayechi, Klei Chomos, you know, why was Yaakov Avinu so angry? Apart from the fact that he said earlier, you know, I'm an imasemis bor, I'm few in number, and why do you do this? It's the same Parshas Vayishlach. There's now in the Torah, Rav Zalman Sorotzkin says, that Yaakov Avinu was angry that his sons did more than they had to do by making them go through a circumcision. By making them go through a circumcision, which was a bluff, and then to get them weaker, and then to go in and kill them out, he was saying you made them go through unnecessary suffering. And that should not have been done. So he was muskin, he was agreeing to the fact that they were punishable, but that they shouldn't have gone as far as they did. Yes? Well, the king would normally appoint a court, or in any democratic country, the civil servants will arrange Her Majesty's tribunals to enforce the law.
That's actually very topical, isn't it? What's happened in Israel, where the ex-president has been convicted of rape, whereas in Shechem, the prince committed rape and wasn't forced to...
Interesting contrast. Nobody's above the law. There are various derivatives, a number of rules in the Torah which come out from theft. For example, not paying your worker on time, overcharging, having false weights and measures, lo sachmod, lo sisavet. So when you start going through the various halachas of not stealing, there are in fact about 16 or so from the Torah which come under this category of theft. Let's move on to Eva Min Hachai. We've spoken about Odom Arishon and Noach as to when this was commanded, and there is an argument about whether blood may be eaten by a Gentile from a living animal. A Gentile may have blood from a dead animal. According to the Rambam it's alright, but others disagree. You might ask the question, why is it that such a thing like eating a limb from a living animal is put on the same equation, so to speak, like murder, theft? Is it such a serious crime just like these others? And this is in fact addressed by the Chinuch in Tov Samach Dalet, who says that the whole root of the mitzvah of Eve Min Hachai is to avoid cruelty, Midas Achzorius. And this is something which goes to the very root of a person's personality, and the din of Tzar Balei Chaim comes out from Eve Min Hachai, that a Gentile is forbidden, just like we are forbidden, to give any cruelty to animals. We know that Bilam was rebuked heavily, but Rabbi Yehuda Chosid writes, Bilam was rebuked heavily when he hit his donkey. Why are you hitting your donkey? And when he said, if I had had my sword, I would kill you, as a result of that, he was killed by the sword because of what he did. Here is a Gentile man who was punished simply for cruelty to animals. And there is, even if you don't learn it out directly from a posuk, according to Rav Zalman Goldberg, there's a kal vachomer. There is a kal vachomer if Jews may shecht, if Jews may slaughter and are forbidden to make, to do anything which is cruel to animals, then Odom Arishon, who wasn't allowed to shecht, alachas kama vachama, all the more so he had a duty to make sure he was not being cruel to animals. There was also the issur of cannibalism, of not eating human flesh. Again, Odom Arishon, another kind of kal vachomer. Odom Arishon was commanded, you're not allowed to kill, have any flesh. Noach afterwards was given the heter to have meat, a bosor behema, so the prohibition of human flesh still remained. So a Gentile may kill for food without shechita, but must minimize the suffering, so says the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim 3:17, and any unnecessary killing, such as hunting, is forbidden, so says the Chinuch in Tov Mem Beis, because it's called Nidas Achzorius. The Rabbeinu B'chai also writes about it in the Rambam Yud Beis.
Pardon? If hunting is forbidden, why was Eitzel allowed to kill the animal
then?
Well,
that was for food.
He did cut it and then he
was This is a good general question.
Yeah. The Gentiles are not given the mitzvah of shechita, it's true, but they are nevertheless told to minimize as much as possible. As far as Esav is concerned, we could do a drosh about before Matan Torah and were the others chayv to keep the mitzvahs. There's a long drosh about this in a sefer called Proshas Derochim. The very first part has a very long and interesting drosh about were the others called Bnei Noach, were they Noachide, or were they Jews? The Torah wasn't given yet, so they couldn't have been called Jews. If Avraham Avinu would walk in, can you count him into a minion? By the same token, were they were not really Bnei Noach. I mean, Yaakov Avinu married two sisters, which Bnei Noach are not allowed to do, so how could Yaakov Avinu do it? Alright, so what if it was outside Eretz Yisrael? But the answer given is that they became Geirim, and as they converted, they were no longer effectively related to each other. So there's a very wide subject here which is worthy of discussion. But you never, maybe Esav was going to do a shechita. He was going to catch an animal and serve it to his father for food. I don't know that Mezid Hizah. Alright. When I say hunting, I mean as a sport, like bullfighting. The general rule of thumb is to avoid Nidas Achzorius. I know that the pro-hunting lobby argue that it's good because of one reason or another, and the foxes are killing their animals, and there can be many justifications, but I'm really only speaking in general terms, that a Gentile is asked to avoid Midas Achzorius, something which is ugly and despicable in human nature. And that is spelt out by not being cruel to animals generally. Then we come to the din of dinim, of law courts. A judge may not take bribes, a judge may not favour the poor, a judge may not discriminate against the sinner. These are all rules which are spelled out in the Torah, which all come out in relation to justice. Of course, one may not swear falsely, telling lies, and that all comes under dinim. In fact, according to the Ramban, all the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach come within the scope of dinim, because dinim is the general consensus of applying law generally. There's a tshuva of the Ramah in Simin Yud, which talks about, does dinim apply also to the Gentiles' social customs, or just the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach? But certainly it's within the ambit of any court to bring out laws like no dangerous driving or something like that. Now, what we asked at the beginning was, are there just seven? And we've spoken about the various derivatives of the seven, but we do find sources to suggest further rules which relate to the Gentiles. Honouring parents isn't one. There's the famous story of Domo ben Messina, who wouldn't wake up his father. The rabbis wanted a precious stone for the temple, and they wanted to buy it from him for a large sum of money, but he wouldn't wake up his father. He was sleeping on the quay or something. And he was greatly rewarded by having had a paraduma, a red cow, which was valued a lot of money. One might argue whether they had a proper mitzvah kibbutz of aim, because the Gemara there says, if somebody who is not commanded it, how much more so we who are commanded it? But there's definitely a mitzvah for Gentiles to honour parents. There's a mitzvah in the Ovester Rabbi Nosson listed as giving charity, that a Gentile has a mitzvah. A story is given about Rabbi Akiva, who met a man who had sank in water, and the waves brought him up, and he heard the waves saying something about, here is a man who gives charity, a Gentile, and he was saved. A Gentile has a mitzvah to offer karbonos. And interestingly enough, that Gentile can even offer karbonos nowadays, because the restriction that we have about domon, shechitas chutz, doesn't apply to a Gentile. The Gentile could theoretically offer a korban ola nowadays, as Gemara in Zevachim Kuftes Zayin on the base. We also know that Gentiles have a mitzvah of prayer. That is to say, that if they daven, and Reb Moshe Feinstein writes about this in Igros Moshe Arachaim Chelek Beis in chapter 25, he says that a Gentile gets a reward for praying. He bases this on Isaiah in chapter 56 verse 7, and he also talks about these assemblies or non-denominational meetings where prayers are done together. Another mitzvah, we've spoken about procreation, and we've spoken about to avoid sorcery, a witchcraft, and go on. And generally, there's something called mitzvah sechlios. Mitzvahs which are common sense. Visiting the sick, for example. To have guests. These are all praiseworthy things, although they might not be explicitly listed. The Talmud of Menashe, we've spoken about, he talks about crossbreeding and he talks about castration. So we find that it's not just seven mitzvahs, but they not. If you add up all the ones we've been saying, and the ones the Gemara says, and the ones that the Rambam says, you come to approximately 66, which is already many more than seven. But the other question which we asked was, if a Gentile is not keeping to all the mitzvahs, can that Gentile still be called one of the Hasidei Umosa Olam, one of the righteous Gentiles? And it's interesting because there are some 22,765 people who are listed by Yad Vashem as righteous Gentiles, who went out of their way to save Jews from the Nazis. In fact, there were whole villages in Holland which had a very well organized attempt to hide lots of Jews in different houses and different cellars and to coordinate with each other. And these people who faced death if they would have been caught by the Nazis. And we know about Wallenberg, who saved lots of Jews from the Nazis. We know about Oscar Schindler. There's this famous Japanese consul, Sugihara, I think his name was, who signed lots of visas, worked through the nights just to stamp as many visas as possible to get Jews out to Japan. The whole Near Yeshiva went out to Japan and Shanghai as a result of him. So Rabbi Yisrael Meilau, he who himself was in Buchenwald concentration camp, he writes about these people as the Chassidei Umos HaOlam, as the righteous Gentiles of the world who get the world to come. In fact, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kufei Amud Aleph, which says there are four who don't get world to come. There's Bilam, there's Doeg, there's Achisofel, there's Gehazi, as if to infer that the others who are not on that list do get the world to come. Ah, what about what the Rambam said about standing in front of three people to declare one is a Ger Toshav? The Sefer Yerachim says that is not necessary. In fact, to actually call somebody a Ger Toshav formally is really only applicable when there's a Yovel. Apparently, I heard in the name of Rav Aaron Kotler, the founder of Lakewood, said that Abraham Lincoln, who abolished slavery and improved the human rights for many Americans, was one of the righteous Gentiles. The Sefer Hasidim writes about Charvona, who we sing about on Purim. He writes there in Simon Tovshin Menvol, the Gam Charvona Zochor Latov. He was no greater tzaddik, this Charvona. In fact, he was a rather crafty devil. And he had ulterior motives when he got hung on the gallows. But he is Zochor Latov. We say Zochorna Mivrocha to anybody who has done something which has been good for others. And the Midrash Talpios writes, that's Rabbi Yoah Cohen from Izmir, that Rabbi Baravua found Eliyahu Novi. He found Elijah standing by the grave of a Gentile, praying to save his soul for helping Jews out of danger. The Tiferes Yisrael writes a very interesting essay on this in the third chapter of Perkei Avos. There the Tiferes Yisrael writes about the question I've just asked about whether people can be called Chasidei Umos HaOlam if they have been doing something but without keeping all the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. And he brings some interesting examples, because he says there is no question about the fact that there are many, many righteous Gentiles, even those who we might not call righteous in our language, who are worthy of the world to come. And he gives examples, and he quotes, in fact, two British citizens and two German ones. So, of course, we'll start with the British first. He talks about Sir Francis Drake, who in 1565, yeah, apart from fighting the Spanish Armada, that's nothing to do with it, I'll tell you why he is called righteous. He says Sir Francis Drake gets the world to come because he brought potatoes to Europe, and as a result, he saved lots of people dying from hunger. The potato was a cheap source of nourishment for thousands and millions of people, and as a result of the potatoes, starvation stopped, and as a result of this, he gets the world to come. Apparently, Sir Francis Drake also brought tobacco to England. So that probably should be shot. Apparently he brought it to Sir Walter Raleigh. Yeah.
Can you tell who said this?
The Tiferes Yisrael, I think his name was Lipschitz. Yeah, you'll find him in the Ayin Aleph Perushim of the Mishnayos, at the very end of Perek Gimel of there's the Yochin of Boaz, it's in the Boaz bit. In the Yochin of Boaz, Perek Gimel, Perkei Avos, at the end there he's got the Boaz, and he's got a very long piece talking about the Chassidei Umos HaOlam, and he credits Sir Francis Drake for bringing potatoes to Europe. He also speaks about a gentleman from the county of Gloucestershire by the name of Edward Jenner, who founded the smallpox vaccination. Smallpox has now officially been eradicated from the whole world, I think in 1979. He founded the smallpox vaccination. He discovered that the pox of a cow can be used to develop a vaccine which can eradicate smallpox. And in fact, this Edward Jenner is called by scientists the father of immunology, because his concept of bringing about vaccines has been developed not only for smallpox but other illnesses, including nowadays HIV and AIDS, based on his principles. And he is called one of the Tzaddiki Umos HaOlam who merits the world to come. Coming over to the German citizens, he mentions Gutenberg, who founded the printing press in 1450. From the town of Mainz, the mere fact that he developed such an invention which enables people to study Torah properly and widely all around the world, he says, gives him this merit of the world to come. And another German citizen he mentions is Reuchlin. In the year 1509, there was a big controversy arising from a Jew called Pfefferkorn. This Pfefferkorn, he was an apostate, a Geschmatteyid, who caused lots of trouble for the Jews, arguing to the Dominican priests and eventually to the Pope that all Jewish texts should be destroyed, except the Chumash, he said. And this was adopted at first by the German Kaiser called Maximilian, and the whole subject was brought before a tribunal of whom Reuchlin was a member. Reuchlin was a Gentile priest, and he came out in favour of the Jews and said there is nothing wrong with the Jewish text, they don't have to be burnt. He wrote something called Augenspiegel against this guy called Pfefferkorn, and it was Reuchlin's view which saved Maximilian from insisting that the Shas and other Jewish works should be burnt, even though the Pope upheld this decree himself, and it was really part of the Reformation and the conflict between the breakaways, Protestantism which was developing, and the Catholics. But in a nutshell, it's very strong, says that Reuchlin is one of the Tzaddiki Umos HaOlam. If we then move on and end up with a Gemara from Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Ches, there's a very sad story there of Rav Chanina ben Tradion, who was being burnt by the Romans. He was being tortured with a Sefer Torah being burnt on him, and they put wet wool on him in order to slow down his death and to make him feel additional pain. And there was this executioner there, who was obviously acting under some sort of instructions, who must have been feeling sorry for him, because he said to Rabbi Chanina, he said, if I would remove the wet wool from your chest and speed up your death, would I get Olam Haba? And Rabbi Chanina said yes. And he said, will you promise me I will get Olam Haba? And Rabbi Chanina said yes. So he took away the wet wool, and Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan passed away. And then this executioner himself jumped into the fire and died. A Jew mustn't do that, that would be suicide. But Nigras Moshe talks about that in Yerodei Chelek Beis, Kofayim Dalet. This executioner was a Gentile. A bas kol then came out. A heavenly voice decreed, Yotza bas kol v'omro, Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan, v'klastorini, that's the executioner, v'zuman heim l'chaye olam haba. They are both meriting the world to come. And this executioner was not somebody who kept the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. And yet it's written that he would merit the world to come. So much more so, says Rav Lau, those who saved us from the Nazis, even if they are not keeping all the seven Noachide laws, how much more so they would be meriting the world to come. And there's an interesting idea we can end off with from Rav Elchanan Wasserman, who sadly was killed by the Nazis. But ironically, he said that the reason why we are in Godus, the reason why God has split us up around the world, is so that we should be able to learn from our Gentile friends, whom we are living amongst, how we should be behaving. And he quotes as examples the British. He says the British are very traditional. They've got to have things always the way it used to be. And that is a lesson for us to learn as Jewish people, that we should follow that example of the British. He also paradoxically mentions the Germans, because, well, he said this before the Holocaust. He says the Germans are very exact and very efficient. Well, they are efficient in whatever they do. And he said, and we can learn from that as Jews. And of course, what do we see nowadays in America? The paper money of the USA. In God we trust. We can learn from the Americans. They write it on their money. In God we trust. Others pay cash. Thank you very much.